Hey, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here. We are live on the 18th floor of 303 East Wacker for our first show from the Allstate Skyline Studio. And we're all very excited about the new digs. And I'm happy that my crew and I are all in the same rooms now. We're next to each other. And that's the way it should be. We're very, very happy. And it is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about the new terms that are going into the dictionary a little bit later on. Tons of stuff to talk about. We're going to, a little bit later on, we're going to get into the rainiest movies of all time. And then we'll do another round of For the Record when Skip Skipley shows up for the first time here at 303. All right. Right now, though, I want to welcome back to the show Jim Ryan. He writes about music for Chicago Now, the Daily Herald, and now Forbes. You can visit his website at RadioJimRyan.com. You can follow him on Twitter at RadioJimRyan. Lots of music stuff to talk about. And here's Jim Ryan. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'm honored, actually.
Yeah, you're the first guest. You're the first guest in the new digs.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's fun, man. I'm glad you could make it out.
This is fancy stuff.
It is, man, and incredible view.
Yeah,
you know, and
oh my god,
we're up there, man. This is
seriously.
The 18th floor. Yeah, but yeah, no, it's great. They did an amazing job putting this thing together, and you know, this was our first full day on the air. Was the 18th.
I didn't realize that was the case, and then I heard yesterday morning. I watched your video.
Yeah.
The final. I was like, oh man,
that was it. I posted on my Facebook page the final minute. That was broadcasts out of the Trib Tower.
You called it history, and that's literally true. That's amazing.
Yeah, so you can see the video. It's not very profound. It's me. It's me talking.
But it is history.
And it is history. It's me basically doing the billboard to the news. Mm-hmm. That's basically what I'm doing is that. But anyway, so we're here to talk some music. We got a lot of music to talk about and some really cool. You saw some really good shows.
There's been a lot of great stuff lately. A
lot of stuff, and we want to get into that. But from my end,
yes.
I have some music news that I would like to share.
Please.
Buffalo Tom is coming to town.
Oh, where at?
September 8th, Metro.
I've never seen them, by the way.
Now, see, here's the thing, though. I mean, it's not a competition for me, but it's the same night as Childish Gambino, which, yeah. I know.
All right, but what time is Buffalo Tom going to go on?
Probably 9. It's a Saturday night, 9, 10 o'clock maybe.
You can probably... Is Childish Gambino's United Center,
He's United
right?
Center, yeah. That's a
oh,
bit of
man,
a trek.
That is...
But the thing is, I'm going to be hanging out with the band, because I know Bill, so...
Okay.
So
you got to go to Metro.
I'm going to the Metro, yeah, and I'm going to hang out. And it's really funny, because they posted it on their Facebook page and on social media that
okay.
they're... And that they're finally coming to Chicago.
Yeah.
And they said it's the 25th anniversary of Let Me Come Over 1 year late.
That's crazy.
Which is pretty much what it is. Because last year they did a tour, you know, like a mini
right.
tour for...
The new album is good.
It's great. Yeah. So anyway, that's big news for me. I mean, my favorite band is coming to town. And
when
they're
is
playing
this again?
September 8th.
All right, I got to go to that.
Saturday, September 8th. It's just... But I had, like, I was going to try and get tickets for Childish Gambino. No. I'm not now.
I've seen Bill do a solo thing. Well, not a solo thing. At Martyrs, he was doing
Kate Pearson.
Yes, the Beatles
there.
Thing.
Graham Parsons.
Graham Parker. Right?
Yeah. No, Graham Parker.
Graham
Parsons is dead.
Yeah.
They put him in a car and drove him outside.
Yeah.
No, Graham Parker and I was there.
Yeah.
That was when they did the Lost John Lennon songs.
That was so cool.
It was awesome. Yeah. It was really awesome. Yeah. That was the night he agreed. That was the night he agreed to write music for my play.
Wow.
Because afterwards, we took him, my buddy and I, he jumped in the car with us, and we took him over to Simon's up in Andersonville,
okay.
which is the bar we were hanging out at. And the script was in the back of the car that my friend and I were writing, and which eventually became Here Comes a Regular.
Okay.
And it was about a guy going through a breakup, hanging out with his buddies in a bar. And so I was like, hey, and he's looked at this, and he's like, what is this? And I'm like, it's a script that we're writing. And I'm like, oh. And yeah, I said, it's going to go up in November. And he's like, oh, wow, that's cool. And I'm like, hey, you should write music for it. And I was joking around.
Right.
And he's like, all right, well, let me read it. And I'm like, well, it's not done yet. And then I sent him a copy of it. He read it, and I sent him a copy of, on DVD, I sent him a copy of The Vinyl Shop, which
okay.
was my adaptation of High Fidelity.
High Fidelity, right.
And I said, it's kind of similar in tone to this. And he wrote an entire score for it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
It's unbelievable. And he did a version of Here Comes a Regular for the end of the show. For the Yeah.
You had to be like
yeah.
on cloud nine.
Oh, it was insane. It was completely insane.
Wow.
Yeah, like my rock hero wrote music for a play that I, you know, so it was incredible. And he came to see it too, and he loved it, and it was
fun. Man.
He's a good guy, man, and they're an amazing band. You've never seen them, right?
I've never seen them. I've read his book on Exile on Main Street,
oh,
by
yeah.
the way. He's like the foremost Rolling Stones authority, as you know.
He's a complete Stones nut, yeah. But anyway, they're unbelievable. It will be a life changing event for you.
I'm very excited.
Maybe you can be my plus one.
Oh,
and I'll get you backstage. You can meet the band and stuff.
That would be cool.
Yeah,
could do that.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, Jim, let's start off with a little tragedy that happened to you just yesterday.
Let's dive right into it.
Yeah, let's go right. Let's start off with this one. Then we'll get to the really happy stuff and the great music that you wrote about. But something happened. This doesn't happen to a lot of people, Jim.
No, it doesn't.
Can you explain? Let's set this whole thing up. What's going on here?
So I had been working now for about the last month, too. That's the most painful part about this. This didn't happen overnight. Trying to book an interview with Roger Daltrey.
Well, kind of a legend.
Yeah. I think that would immediately top my list.
Oh.
He's got a new solo album out. Pete plays on 7 of the 11 tracks.
Wow.
He's touring Tommy. He'll be at Ravinia Saturday and Monday, I believe, doing Tommy with a full orchestra. He covers Stevie Wonder on the album, by the way.
What song?
You haven't done nothing.
Oh, you're kidding.
Nope.
How is it?
Awesome.
Oh, man, I bet. Okay.
So there's a lot to talk about. You know, I kept telling everybody, I'm like, I'm trying to book Roger Daltrey, and I'm not even gonna get excited about it until the guy's actually on the phone, right? So my deadline was today. This was going to be for the Daily Herald.
So your deadline was Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So my deadline was Monday.
Right.
And this was for the Daily Herald. So I'm on the train coming in today, paying no attention to my phone. I was actually writing my review of Robert Plant's concert Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to that.
And I finished that up and I looked down at my phone and there's a missed call from a number that had blocked the caller ID. And I'm like, so help me God, if this is what I think this is. And there's a voicemail, so I listened to it, and sure enough, it was Roger Daltrey informing me that I had missed the interview I didn't know was happening because nobody had clued me into the fact that it had been scheduled.
Nobody told you it was scheduled, so...
So he tells me he'll call back in 5 minutes, and that was about 15, 16 hours ago, something like that.
So he still hasn't called back.
Yeah, no, he's not called back.
And you missed your deadline anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can we hear this? This voicemail?
Yes.
Right, this is Roger Daltrey leaving a voicemail on Jim Ryan's personal phone. Here we go.
All right.
Hello, Jim. It's Roger Daltrey. I'm calling because I was asked to call you to do an interview. I'm calling on Skype because I can hear you better. I'll call you back in 5 minutes. Hopefully, you'll get this message. Bye.
But oh my God!
Got the message,
oh
but
my God.
Would have been nice if he had called back in 5 minutes.
Because
I was ready at that point. You know what the most painful part of this is too? I had my recorder in my bag. Even if he had called on the train, I could have
started.
I could have recorded. I wasn't prepped. I don't know how good it would have been, but I could have at least.
I think you could interview Roger Daltrey without being completely prepped.
Yeah.
There's a lot there. Wow, that is stunning, man.
I love that he identifies himself on
Roger
the voicemail,
Daltrey.
Too. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So that was kind of painful.
Yeah. Geez, I'm sorry, man.
No, I'm trying to right this wrong and get him for Forbes now, where I have a much more flexible deadline. So we'll see what happens.
When did you start writing for Forbes?
2 weeks ago. What's today? The 21st or something like that?
Today is the 19th.
The 19th? I don't even know. The 19 days ago then.
Okay. So
yeah,
right at the beginning
1st,
of June.
This is new. Yeah.
All right, cool. How'd that happen?
A friend of mine, Andy Fry, writes sports for Forbes,
mm-hmm.
and he writes the business of sports, and I kind of laughed when he told me what he does. I'm like, I already do the business of music and everything, and all of the interviews I do, and he's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, the changing industry, the fall of the major labels, the rise of the internet, everything moving to streaming, all these, you know, artists who have to find these new revenue streams, that it comes up in every interview I do, where I'm already kind of doing the business of music. He's like, well,
pitch
this guy. And I'm like, okay.
There you go.
And literally that was, I think, going into Memorial Day weekend, and I started it June 1st.
Okay. I don't know what's going on with that. We're getting, whoever is getting emails, it's popping up, making a sound. All right, Jim, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, there's Jim Ryan, who missed a call from Roger Daltrey. Which is going to be a claim to fame. All right, we have to break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios on the 18th floor of 303 Wacker. It's our first official show at the new place, and we're having a great time. And very excited about all the new stuff and the new offices and the new studios and the new edit bays and the new Esmeralda has a new hut and Dave has a sports hut. There's all kinds of new huts. And we're having a good time. Coming up on the show, it's 2 for Tuesday, by the way. Get your requests in now. Year Beer 2 for Tuesday. And that's 312-981-7200. You request them, we'll play them a little bit later on. It's one artist, two songs. We are going to talk about the rainiest movies of all time, talking about some new phrases that are going into the dictionary, and a lot more fun stuff here. And Skip Skipley. Dan, have we heard from Skip Skipley?
Yes, the Penguins reported that everything is smooth sailing with the inaugural sub-ride.
Okay. All right, and we'll play another round of For the Record, which is a fun music trivia game that Esmeralda and I play. All right, let's get back to it. Speaking of music, Jim Ryan is with us. He writes about music for Chicago Now, the Daily Herald, and now Forbes. You can visit his website at RadioJimRyan.com. You can follow him on Twitter at RadioJimRyan, and we talk periodically with Jim all about music. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
Did Roger Daltrey call while we were in the news?
Let me check. No, still nothing there. No.
Oh, boy. All right, yeah. Listen, you mentioned Robert Plant and the Sensational Space Shifters.
Yes.
And it seemed like on my social media, everybody I knew was at that show.
And did everyone rave about it?
Yes, okay. They did. So tell me about it.
It was unbelievable. So he did 90 minutes, and in that 90 minutes, there was 13 songs. So and the last one was a medley. So he really took his time to make everything count. He was not rushing through anything. I was shocked by the fact that 9 of those 13 songs were Zeppelin songs, because usually he's very staunchly against that.
Yeah.
But 9 of the 13 were Zeppelin songs, and some of them were pretty close arrangements, because usually he avoids that too. Usually everything's barely recognizable, but he did 4 sticks for the first time so far on this tour. He busted that out. He opened with the Lemon Song.
What?
Went from the Lemon Song to 4 sticks to What Is and What Should Never Be.
Oh, come on.
Those were his first 3 songs of the set.
Come on now.
It was unbelievable. For a Zeppelin fanatic, I mean, it was...
Yeah.
This is, I think, as close as you're
you
getting to.
You said Lemon Song to what?
4 sticks.
4 sticks to...
What Is and What Should Never Be.
What Should Never Be, which is my favorite Zeppelin song of all time.
So it was amazing.
Wow.
Closed with Whole Lot of Love, which is...
That's crazy, man. What was his band like?
His band, he had a 6-piece backing band, so 2 guitar players, keyboards, drums, bass, and violin on some songs.
Did he do Kashmir?
He did not do Kashmir. He did Going to California. He did Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You. What else did he do?
And what venue was this?
Millennium Park. So Pritzker Pavilion. So cool setting for it, right in the middle of downtown there, despite the fact that it was, 130 degrees.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. I mean, he still sounds so good, too. I've heard him talk about how he considers his voice his instrument, and he, goes to great lengths to try to... keep it sharp, and man, especially on the slower stuff, like Going to California and Babe, I'm Gonna Leave, he sounded terrific.
Yeah.
He's lost very little of that range.
And he's 69?
69, and this, by the way, amazed me. I posted this on social media because I was shocked that he's not 70 yet. Paul McCartney had a 76th birthday yesterday. This means that the lead singer of Led Zeppelin at 69 is younger than Daryl Hall, Steven Tyler, and Sammy Hagar.
Wow.
Who are all 70.
Wow.
How is it possible the lead singer of Led Zeppelin is younger than the guy from Hall & Oates?
Daryl Hall is 70?
71, I think.
71?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you think about
the timing,
it makes sense. But to just say, Daryl Hall, he's 71, you go, what?
Uh-huh. And Sammy, too, because Sammy doesn't look, he looks the same as he always has.
It's tequila.
I mean, I feel like Led Zeppelin... It is tequila. I just feel like Led Zeppelin's on like a totally different plane. It just seems ancient, but it's, I guess not.
Yeah. I still have my ticket from the 1980 tour.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Chicago Stadium?
Yeah.
Wow.
Dan Bonham died.
Yep.
Dummy. All right. Well, so now had you ever seen Robert Plant before? You have, right?
Yeah. 2000 or 2001, it was about a month after John Entwistle died, because Plant was opening for The Who on that tour.
So
they played in Tinley Park, and we had the tickets already, and then Entwistle died, and I remember thinking, well, this show's not going to happen now, but a month later, they were right there with Pino Palladino on bass, and the show must go on.
But, yeah. And Plant opened?
Plant was the opener.
Yeah.
So that was a Plant and The Who in Tinley.
That's pretty cool.
That was one night, and then the next night was Jimmy Page and the Black Crowes.
Oh, okay.
Because they were doing a twofer deal on that in Tinley Park.
Or you could go to each,
you
each
can go
of the shows separately.
Yeah, oh, I see. In the lawn.
Oh, I see.
But that's, and then I saw him at a benefit at the Vic last year. It was a landmine benefit, and he was with Steve Earle, Emmy Lou Harris. It was quite phenomenal.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So good to hear. Robert Plant, 69, and still got it.
Absolutely does, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of the Forbes pieces that you've written recently.
Okay.
You've got Peter Gammons talking about the hot stove cool music benefit.
Yeah, that was a benefit last Friday at Metro.
Speaking of Bill Janovitz, was a big...
yeah,
he was involved in that big time in Boston, and he came to Chicago for
did
the
he?
First one that they did here. Yeah,
okay.
That Theo was. That's when I met Theo and hung out with him.
Okay,
yeah.
So yeah, that was last Friday at Metro when Theo was there.
Yeah.
Theo played guitar with Gammons. He played guitar as well, and they had Bernie Williams, former Yankees outfielder, on guitar with them as well.
Is that right? Was Len Casper there?
Len Casper was there. He was playing bass.
Okay. Yeah, no. He's played at almost every one of them that they've done in Chicago.
No, and he's pretty good. I talked to him, and I talked to Peter Gammons, and I mean they both know their music so well. I mean, they're not just music fans. I mean, they know their stuff.
No, they do.
Len specifically, because I've talked to him before, and I know he's a huge, like, I've seen him out at concerts and around town. I mean,
he's a huge music fan.
Yeah.
Huge.
So he spoke kind of to the, you know, Chicago music history. Peter, it was interesting because you got two sides of that. Peter dives into the blues history because that's his thing.
Yeah.
You know, he talked about the first 45 record that he ever bought was School Days by Chuck Berry.
Nice.
Cut at Chess Records.
Nice.
He told a story about coming in when he was covering the Red Sox, and he was in Chicago, about having to make the trip down Michigan Avenue to 2120 South.
Yeah, of course.
Because he's a Stones fan, and, you know, they got the song. But so he talked about all that, and then Len kind of talked about Chicago's history as it in the more alternative and pop arena. I know he's a Material Issue fan and, you know, that kind of stuff. The Orwells headlined this year at Metro. So it was interesting to get those two viewpoints on Chicago's kind of music history. It was really cool.
And how was the gig? Was it a fun night?
Yeah, it was. Are you familiar with the Orwells? Garage Rock?
Yes.
Out of Chicago? Okay.
Yes.
So they headlined. Theo took a stage dive and was crowd surfing.
Of course he did.
With Joe Shanahan.
Of course.
During the closing set.
Joe Shanahan, by the way, runs the Metro. He's a legend.
Yes.
A Chicago music legend, Joe Shanahan.
But
been on the show several times. He's a great guy.
The stage dive was unexpected.
Oh,
there, so that was good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anthony Rizzo and David Ross came out. They were the unexpected guests, and they did an a cappella rendition of Ice Ice Baby.
Wait a minute, Rizzo and David Ross.
Uh-huh. They both strapped on a guitar. Neither played.
They just did. They did Ice Ice Baby.
They did sing a cappella. Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Madden was there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Cubs were well represented at the Hot Stove Cool Music Benefit.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool thing. And I'm glad Theo brought it with him here because they've been doing it in Boston for years, you know, when he was running the Red Sox.
Theo's brother, Paul, the two of them kind of co-founded that together. And I talked to Paul before the event, and he said when Theo first left in 2011, it was late in 2011 to come here, he was worried that the event wasn't going to continue at all, let alone, you know, become what it's become now in Chicago with all these huge, you know, guests like Eddie Vedder and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to, you know, get that perspective.
I've been to two of them.
Okay. Who did you see?
The first one I went to was Billy Corgan was the headliner.
Okay.
It was actually Smashing Pumpkins. It wasn't Corgan. It was actually Smashing Pumpkins. I'm not a fan, so I hung out in the back with Bill Janovitz.
pointed and snickered.
Yeah, no, I didn't even. I went out and I saw one song, and then I was like, okay.
Okay, you got
your fill. Smashing Pumpkins, so I'm going to go. Sorry, Dan. Dan's a big fan of
so,
the Smashing
so
Pumpkins.
So am I, Dan.
I'm trying to remember who else. Buffalo Tom. Len Casper played.
Okay.
And then the All-Star guys came out. Like, everybody was out on stage. There were like seven different musicians out there. Bill was out there. Theo was out there. Dan, why am I blanking on Casper's old TV partner, who they...
Brenly,
that's right.
Yes.
Brenly came out and started jamming with everybody.
Nice.
Vedder was there. It was pretty good. Yeah, it was a great night. And the second one, I can't remember who I saw in the second, who was there the second time. Or that was the second. No. No, because that was the very first one.
That sounds right.
Yeah, that was the very first one. That's when I hung out with Theo. I got to meet him. And this was like...
It's a good night.
Yeah, this was like, you know, when everybody was like, you're doing it all wrong. They're screaming at Theo about how he's not handling the Cubs correctly. Because everybody thought that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
Everybody
okay.
thought that 2 minutes after Theo got the job, the Cubs would win
the World Series.
Yeah.
I went to piggyback off that. I went 1 year when the guests were, it was Cheap Trick without Robin Zander.
Oh no, I was at that. Okay. I was at that one.
So Tom Morello.
Yeah, Tom Morello.
who went up there made a complete fool out of himself.
Yep. I was there. How did I forget that? Yeah.
Like, for a guy who considers himself such a hardcore Cub fan, he sure sounded like a complete utter idiot that night.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was unbelievable.
It is crazy.
Going off in that total diatribe, which, by the way, was completely preconceived, because within 20 minutes of leaving the Metro that night, there was a full transcription of his whole spiel on at RollingStone.com.
Oh,
I'm like, amazing that they had this whole thing already.
Yeah, they recorded it and transcribed it really quickly.
No, so it was all preconceived. It was ridiculous.
It's funny, you know, that night at Hot Stove Cool Music, I was talking to Janowitz, and he was like, listen, let me tell you something right now. You will have a World Series in this city by 2015. And he was off by a year. Off by 1 year. And they played their hearts out in 2015, too, and it was a great season. But he was off by 1 year, and you know.
Well, and that Mets team caught fire.
Yeah, they did.
But
Daniel Murphy. All right, let's take a break. And we got more with Jim Ryan. We're talking music with Jim Ryan. And again, you can check out his website at RadioJimRyan.com for more. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live on the 18th floor of 303 East Wacker, our first show in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and we're here until 5 a.m. Our new time, as you can tell, we're on earlier than usual because it's 10 to 2, and we're already on the air. We are now 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. We get an extra hour to hang out with you guys, and we're happy about that. Two for Tuesday coming up. Here, Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in, and we'll play them later. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. You should also listen to our podcasts. Download them. They're free. Every second of every show is podcast, and you can listen to them at your leisure, bro. They're free, and they will be automatically sent to you. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe right now to our podcast. Jim Ryan is with us. He writes about music for Chicago Now, The Daily Herald, and now Forbes. You can check out his website at RadioJimRyan.com. Follow him on Twitter at RadioJimRyan. And we welcome Jim back to the show. Welcome back, Jim.
Thank you.
We've been talking about some of the concerts that you've attended, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the interviews that you've done as well.
Sure.
Tell me what you thought of U2. I've heard very, very positive things about this tour.
You know what? Say what you want about the most recent two albums. I would argue that they are firing creatively on tour as well as they ever have been. And that includes Zoo TV and Zoo Europa and everything. In my opinion, the staging on this tour is so unique and pushes the arena experience forward in a way that I don't think anybody else is.
My friend Colin Suter, who reviews movies here on the show, is like a diehard U2 fan, you know, travels to see them, goes to see them a bunch. I think he's seen him like 37, 38 times or something like that. He's seen him three times on this tour, in Nashville and both dates in Chicago.
Okay.
And maintains that it's their best tour since Zoo TV.
I would agree with that.
He says it's extraordinary. And he also told me, and this is something that I found amazing, they don't play anything from the Joshua Tree.
Correct.
You know, and I know that they did the Joshua Tree tour last year. And I think they covered all that. But that's astonishing that not one song from the Joshua Tree is being played.
And then it speaks to how many hits they have, because they still come out and they do Pride in the Name of Love. And they're doing Desire on this tour for the first time in a while. I mean, it's just, they can skip arguably their most famous album and skip it entirely and still provide a show.
I don't think
resonates.
I've seen U2 several times, not as many as Colin, but I've seen U2 a bunch of times, and I don't think I've ever seen them. Well, I mean, obviously before the record came out, before Joshua Tree came out, I saw them the first time I saw them was on the War Tour.
Okay.
I saw them a couple times on the War Tour. I saw them on the Unforgettable Fire Tour. And then, you know, when Joshua Tree came out, I was kind of, when Rattle and Hum came out, I was kind of negative on U2 because I hate that movie and because they come off so pompous and it was their most pretentious time period.
But there is good music in it.
Yeah, there is. No, there is. I couldn't bear to watch these guys. They drove me nuts. And then they completely, obviously, won me back with Octung Baby because
oh my God.
It's my favorite U2 album. And so, but I've never seen them not play Bullet the Blue Sky since Joshua Tree. I mean, that's like a
And Where the Streets Have No Name.
And Where the Streets Have No Name. But, yeah. I mean, Bolt the Blue Sky is like a big, you know, that's a number that they play. He brings out the spotlight. Mm-hmm. You do the whole thing. And it's always, every time I've seen you two post Joshua Tree, it's been a massive highlight. It's one of the best songs that they do.
I feel like Until the End of the World is kind of taking that spot now in the live show, because you have, you know, every night that segment of it where Bono and Edge do their, you know, Edge is playing the crazy guitar solo on that, and they're, you know, Bono's taunting him on the screen. I can't think of another show I've seen that takes advantage of the full space of an arena quite the way this does, mm-hmm. with the use of the video screens. I mean, there's literally not a bad seat in the house. If you're behind the video screen, you're right on top of the main stage. If you're on the other end, you're right on top of the B stage. If you're in the nosebleeds, you're in the only part of the arena where you can actually see the whole production.
Right.
There's really not a bad seat.
Yeah.
And I just think they're pushing the live experience forward. Like, I can't think of another band that's done that so consistently.
You know, they've always been a great live band. Always. I've seen them a few times. Every single time I see you two, every time I walk out and go, wow.
This is the one, man. This tour has impressed me more than anything else I've seen them do. And every time they're good.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one's something else.
That's what I've heard from everybody. Everybody says that it's just been phenomenal. And when I was talking to Colin about it, and he told me they didn't play anything from Joshua Tree, I was like, what? But again, as you've mentioned, these guys have so many songs that they could rely on.
So as an Octomom Baby fan, you will want to know that for the first time ever, they've busted out Acrobat on this tour.
Oh, come on!
They had never performed that song until this tour.
Man.
And think of the opening line there. Yeah. It's quite relevant to the times we live in.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you two did not disappoint.
No, they were terrific.
Yeah. They're always good. It's one of those deals where that's a band that's always good. Did you see David Byrne?
Yes. This has been such a good month in Chicago for live music, the last couple months really.
Yeah.
Because David Byrne is another one where he has gone out of his way to promote this tour by connecting it to Stop Making Sense. Mm. And he's another guy who won't look back. He doesn't want to revisit the Talking Heads. He wants to move everything forward. So the fact that he's going out of his way to connect this production, and he's not wrong, it's the most ambitious thing he's done since, and it's amazing.
And from what I understand, I saw him perform on one of the talk shows when he was doing promotion for it, and the whole band just moves around.
Yeah, so there's not a single stationary instrument on the stage. So instead of one drummer playing at a drum kit, there's, you know, five drummers marching around with, you know, someone's got a tom, someone's got a bass drum, a dozen musicians on stage, I think, at the most. The show starts with him by himself,
mm-hmm.
and then gradually more and more people make their way onto the stage, and it's. There's no video screens, there's no microphone stands, there's no instrument stands, there's no stationary instruments. It's just them moving around the stage in these choreographed routines, and it's hard to describe it. It's really, visually, it was pretty stunning.
He was on The Daily Show.
Okay.
And he was being interviewed by Trevor, and they showed he tried to describe what it was, but then they showed a clip of one of the performances. He didn't perform live on The Daily Show with 12 musicians, kind of a small space for that. They showed it, and it looked so cool. And, I mean, he's always been a very theatrical guy.
Yeah, I think there's an irony to the way that they're staging it, because when you see the photo of it with these giant walls on each side of the stage, almost to the ceiling, it almost looks like they're trapped in a box, which, you know, obviously nobody's going to accuse David Byrne of, that's what he does, is think outside the box. But it's quite something to see. Yeah, he's not wrong in connecting it to Stop Making Sense, which, as one of the greatest concert films of all time, is a pretty bold statement.
It's the greatest concert film of all time. Yeah. I think it's safe to say that it's the greatest concert film of all time. When that thing came out, Stop Making Sense, I went to the Fine Arts Theater like every other week to see it. That is such a great movie. Jonathan Demme, here's the thing. Jonathan Demme was such a great filmmaker. He knew how to make concert movies like nobody else. And he knew how to make one-man show movies with Spalding Gray, and also, you know, regular narrative movies. He was just a great filmmaker, and that is I think it's the best concert movie ever made.
I think what I enjoy so much about him too right now is that he goes out of his way to try to look at the world in an optimistic sense.
Yeah, he talked about that with Trevor Noah.
I remember in 2001 he was supposed to play the Riv on the 14th
of September,
3 days after 9/11. And it was the wound up, he did the show as scheduled. It wound up being the first show in Chicago that wasn't canceled after the attacks. And he spoke real eloquently that night about how important he thought it was to maintain normalcy. He famously doesn't drive. He's an avid cyclist, but he rented a car in New York and drove the band in the gear to Chicago specifically not to cancel that real show. And, you know, I remember thinking to myself that it was an optimistic voice in a time that seemed, you didn't really know what was happening.
Yeah.
And
feels that way. It feels that way now.
Exactly.
Okay. Jim, hang on. Okay. Jim Ryan's going to hang out with us again. And after the news, we got more music to talk about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and the news is next. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live on the 18th floor of 303 East Wacker in our new studios. It's the Allstate Skyline Studios, and it's beautiful view, beautiful studio, and it's our first show, our first official show out of this studio. We're very excited about it. Dan Shigeru is my great producer. Vic Vaughn is in the newsroom. The great Esmeralda Leon is in the traffic hut. And we'll hear from them a little bit later on. And Esmeralda and I will go head-to-head in a battle of For the Record, which will be coming up. And Skip Skipley is on his way with his submarine. So that's coming up. We are also going to talk about the rainiest movies, which was, I thought, a very specific thing. Jim Ryan is with us, by the way. He's hanging out for a little bit longer here. Jim Ryan, welcome back.
Thank you.
We're talking about music, by the way. He writes for music. I writes about music for Chicago Now, Daily Herald, and now Forbes. And we're talking music. But I was thinking, you know, because of the weather situation all day, it's been rainy. And,
sure.
And I was thinking, well, you know, I wonder what it was like the rainiest movies. And I thought that it was a pretty specific search. But I Googled it, and there were like 9,000 websites dedicated to it.
So, wow, okay.
You can't get that. You just can't get too specific on the internet.
I was just going to say, you just summed up the internet.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, that's what you can't. I thought, you know, I'm going to have to search around for something to jar my memory about rainy movies. Right. No. I mean, and that was like the second search.
We'll give it time. We'll net neutrality may just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that might change it all.
It may go away.
Right, exactly. So we're back talking about, there's a lot of music stuff to talk about. Jim's been busy going to a lot of shows and writing about music and interviewing people and all that cool stuff. So you were telling me off the air that you have a Billy Gibbons story. Now, for people who don't know, Billy Gibbons is a guitarist for ZZ Top.
Yes.
And legendary.
Yes.
And he's one of the two guys that has a beard that isn't named Beard.
Correct.
Because the guy with the named Beard doesn't have a beard.
One.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about ZZ Top. I think it's everybody's favorite thing about ZZ Top. Billy Gibbons, explain to me how you got to speak with Billy Gibbons.
Well, so this is the second time I've had him, actually, and it was, I'm always hesitant to take an email interview. You never know if the questions are actually being answered by the person
that's supposedly
answering them. I'm always hesitant. But I got Billy Gibbons for Chicago Now a couple years ago when he had just gotten back from Cuba and was putting out his first solo album. And I'm like, Billy Gibbons telling stories about Cuba. I think I'll take that anyway. I can get it. And so they were insistent. They're like, he hates phoners. Everything's via email. Okay. So I get the answers back. And, I mean, have you seen ZZ Top Live?
Yes.
That guy telling stories is like the funniest thing ever. Well,
yeah.
I get these answers back, and I mean, he speaks with that like rhythm and swagger. I mean, you can hear him in these answers. I'm like, there's no doubt that Billy Gibbons typed out these answers. So, so I got him again because he's on tour right. ZZ Top is on tour right now with John Fogerty. They were just at Ravinia last week.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask him questions about CCR. So I did. I got the whole list back from him, and he's great. He answers all these questions about Fogerty and, you know, their connection, the two of them having a connection with songs about cars and the road. But I was just thinking what a phenomenal storyteller he is live to me. Billy Gibbons telling a story is about as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
I saw them, ZZ Top, a couple years ago at Chicago Theater, maybe like 2013 or 2014. And he tells this story about, he's like, I think they were coming in from Canada or something the night before, and how they had gotten on the plane and they were told they were going to be delayed. And so Billy Gibbons is telling the story. He's like, we get on the plane and, you know, you tell a musician you're going to be on delay. What happens? We start drinking. So Billy Gibbons is telling this story about getting hammered on the plane. And they wind up being grounded for like 6 hours.
Oh, man.
So he just gets hammered on the plane, right? And then lands at O'Hare at like 3:30 in the morning or something. So he's like, He's like, we're jet lagged and we're tired and we're in the car driving down the Kennedy. And I see it like a beacon in the night off Cumberland. The Taco Burrito King.
Off of Cumberland?
Off Cumberland. The Taco Burrito King. And he's telling, you know, how from Texas, he's got this love of Tex-Mex. We're drunk and we're jet lagged. I need a burrito, man. And he's telling this story about making the driver pull off the Kennedy, like, if we were going to Taco Burrito King. And I just, like...
Could you imagine if you were in the Taco Burrito King?
Yes.
Drunk?
That's where I'm getting at with this. Because Billy Gibbons is, you know, sometimes you see someone go, is that so-and-so? Is that, I can't tell. That's Billy, you know, when you see Billy Gibbons.
Yeah.
That it's Billy Gibbons.
Oh, no. It's Billy Gibbons. There's no question about it. Because the Taco Burrito King off of Cumberland. I mean, I really would love to talk to the people that were in there.
Like
drunk.
Amazing would
getting,
it be?
Getting burritos, and all of a sudden, Billy Gibbons walks in.
And just starts slaying a burrito drunk.
That's fantastic.
And he's telling this story on stage at Chicago Theater. He dragged it out for like 5 minutes. Only Billy Gibbons could tell a story like
yeah.
that. It was amazing.
Oh, that's so great. I'm just seriously thinking, what kind of Twilight Zone do people think they were in when Billy Gibbons walks in?
What kind of burrito do you think Billy Gibbons goes for? Chorizo?
Steak?
I don't know.
Oh, man. That's fantastic.
But yeah, so.
I used to live off of Cumberland. Now, I wasn't near the Taco Burrito King, but I was. If it was the Kennedy, he passed by where I used to live.
There you go.
Because I lived at Foster and Cumberland.
The whole band.
Yeah, the whole
jet-lagged.
Whole band jet-lagged. Now, did the other two guys go in? Or
I think the whole band went in.
Oh, see, now, come on now. Yeah. Well, then that's insane, too.
Seeing the two guys with the beards right next to each other killing burritos.
Yeah. Well, what if they should have came in with spinning guitars. That would have really... That would have flipped out everybody, man.
Pull up in the vehicle from, like, all the videos.
Yeah, and have all the girls come out.
Turns into, like, the video for Sharp-Dressed Man, but with burritos.
Billy Gibbons, man. Yeah. I saw ZZ Top a long time ago, like before their 80s success.
Okay.
Like, I'm talking, like, Tejas was the album that was out at the time.
Yeah.
With $10 Man. And I saw them, and they brought Livestock out on stage. I'm not kidding. They brought Livestock on stage. They used to do that, like, in the 70s and before their big... Because when they broke in the 80s, I mean, in 83, boom, forget it. They were...
Right.
When Eliminator came out, it was all over. I mean, they were the biggest.
Where was this at?
Auditorium.
They brought Livestock onto the stage at Auditorium?
They brought Livestock out on the stage at the Auditorium Theater.
How much Livestock?
There were two bulls, two bulls and two cows.
Were they contained?
Yes, they were in a pen. They brought a pen out. They had a pen out.
So they wandering and
grazing? Yeah, they were just wandering around. They had hay out there for them and stuff.
Good.
So they were, and they were defecating on the ground and...
As bulls and cows want to do.
Have you heard the Ted Nugent story that I've told?
Oh man, no.
Okay, I did not witness this. My friend Scott did.
Okay,
went to go see Ted Nugent at the House of Blues. Okay,
oh my God. Okay,
and so the beginning of the show, Nugent comes out riding on a buffalo, a live buffalo. He's on a buffalo, riding on the buffalo.
Did he shoot it?
No, he did not shoot it.
Okay.
He did shoot burning arrows into guitars.
He did that when I saw him as well.
Yeah, that's one of his things. So he comes out, a live buffalo, and he goes, I bet you didn't think you were going to see an effing buffalo this morning. You know, and then he comes out on the buffalo, and the buffalo's out there. He starts a song, and then they take the buffalo off stage. Okay, so... So, you know, there's a guy following him around with a mop, you know, the buffalo. So the buffalo goes off stage, and he starts screaming, your stupid mayor wouldn't let me have effing machine gun turrets on top of my speakers, but I said F you. And there were machine gun turrets on top of the speakers.
Of course
they weren't working. So they continue. The show continues. For the encore, he comes back out on the buffalo. So... For 90 minutes, a buffalo was backstage at the House of Blues. That's what I'm picturing. There's a buffalo stand. Have you ever been backstage at the House of Blues?
I have, yes. At Ace Freely, by the way.
At Ace Freely? Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Yeah.
But it's not big enough for a buffalo backstage in the House of Blues.
It's really not.
It's not. But I'm up on that
top floor where you have to go upstairs, like there?
I don't know where they put
it. How did they get the buffalo down?
I have no idea, but there was a buffalo.
Yeah. The buffalo got an encore, too.
And the buffalo, they brought the buffalo out. People went nuts.
Wow.
Guy mopping up behind the buffalo. And then afterwards, you know, they just rode the buffalo off. I don't know where they they put him on the bus. I don't know.
They pushed it off somewhere.
Did they get it locally? Is there a buffalo farm in Chicago where they can get buffalo for?
They pushed it off the bus somewhere between New Lenox and Iowa on 80.
It was ridiculous. But anyway, I didn't see it. But my friend Scott describes it. He tells the story much better because he was there.
That's like sensory overload. And you get to hear Wango Tango. I mean, that's a night.
Yeah, that's a night. But like, I'm just trying to picture the buffalo like cramped, like backstage, like just standing up against the wall,
waiting for its
cue. Why am I here? What the hell am I doing? Okay, so anyway.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Yeah, but no, but ZZ Top did used to bring out livestock. That was one of their things.
Amazing.
Yeah, so that's a good Billy Gibbons story.
Yeah, that's I posted the interview with him at Forbes right as I walked in here tonight, so that's
cool.
Up as well.
So that's at Forbes, and it's mostly about Creedence?
It is him answering all questions pretty much about the only non-Creedence question I asked him was, you know, he involves cars, obviously, in all of his work. To speak about the relationship between cars and guitars and what makes it work.
Okay. All right. Cool.
That's good.
All right. Very cool. We can check that out at Forbes. Jim, hang on, okay?
Sure.
We're going to take another break, and we'll come back, and we got some more stuff to talk about with Jim, including his visit to Rainforest Cafe. See, that's what we call a tease in the business.
Yeah, that's...
You know how many people can't wait for the commercials
to
end?
That's a ratings bonanza.
All right. We'll take a break. All right, work. Well, welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Again, it's our first show in the new Allstate Skyline Studios on the 18th floor of 303 Wacker. We're having a great time and loving the studio. And, yeah, and we'll be here until 5. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And your Two for Tuesday request. You're Two for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs. Get them in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Jim Ryan is my guest. He's our good friend. He writes about music for Chicago Now, Daily Herald, and Forbes. And you can check out radiojimryan.com. And discussing more Billy Gibbons during the break. Because it's so worth talking about.
Yes.
Billy Gibbons.
And livestock.
That's exactly right. And you've done some interviews recently that we wanted to mention. What about DJ Silver? Tell us a little bit about that.
It's an interesting story because he's a Vegas native. He has his first album out. He's worked with Jason Aldean since 2009. So one of the biggest names in that world. And in that time... He never released an album because it was such a hard sell for him as an electronic artist in the country world to sell a label on the idea that, you know, there was these that this could work.
Yeah.
Basically, he put out a couple singles and was able to come to an agreement with Sony to get out of his deal with them because they told him flat out, we don't know what to do with you. We don't know where to put you on the radio. We don't know. So he just finished his first album, and it'll be out this summer. So that's an interesting angle. And then he does the residencies in Vegas, which has become this alternative revenue stream, especially for electronic artists, because there's obviously immense demand for DJs to spin at nightclubs in Vegas.
Sure.
But Jason Aldean was the guy who was on stage when the shootings began last October.
Right.
So DJ Silver had just left the stage and was looking for his wife when that began. Turned out he had a 1-year-old child at the time who wound up being in Mandalay Bay, which is where the shooter was held up. His kid was 3 or 4 rooms over from the shooter on the same floor.
No.
They had to send a SWAT team in to get him out. And then amidst the chaos, it took 3 or 4 hours for them to be reconnected, so they didn't know what had happened.
God.
I mean, the story is just...
It's horrifying.
Yeah, it's insane.
Wow.
But, so he was at the Stanley Cup, and, you know, with Vegas, and, you know, he kind of spoke to how that town is, what the temperature is. They're basically not quite a year removed from that.
Sure.
And how people are continuing to respond to it and try to move forward. That was a pretty fascinating discussion.
Wow. What a crazy story.
Yeah, he'll be in town all weekend at the Lake Shake Country
Lake
Music
Shake
Festival.
Country
at,
Music Festival.
Northerly Island.
Oh, yeah, Northerly Island, right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Who else is on the bill there?
I believe Blake Shelton's the big one this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you post some stuff on your social media.
I'm sorry.
A couple of things I want to get to. You visited the Rainforest Cafe. Was this your first visit to the Rainforest
Cafe?
You guys
always find the nuggets buried deep within my social media feed.
Yeah, what? Okay, was that your first time at the Rainforest Cafe?
I think this might have been, it's the first time in probably 30 years.
Right. I've never been to the one here.
I've never been to the one in here.
I went to the one in the Mall of America.
Okay, so
years ago, like in the mid 90s.
The one I went to many, many years ago, I don't remember where it was at, but I do believe it was in a mall.
Yeah.
The one this time was also in a mall, Gurney Mills.
Oh, you didn't go to the one down here.
No,
you
went
to
I've never been to the one down here.
Okay, Gurney Mills. I didn't even know there was a Rainforest Cafe in Gurney Mills.
See, this is why I'm here.
Now, why did you go? Why?
I was at a friend's who lives in Lake Villa.
Uh-huh.
And we came to the conclusion that might be a fun place for their 13-month-year-old child.
Oh, okay.
Who did see it as sensory overload, in fairness.
I would imagine, yeah.
So that was interesting. You know, gorillas, toucans, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, all the mechanical
jungle
stuff that goes.
Stuff,
lots of noise.
Snakes.
Every once in a while it rains. Yeah.
It does rain. You get a thunderstorm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why we went there. There were no children involved when I went.
Well... See, at least I had that going for me then.
So Rainforest Cafe. Yeah. And your impression of Rainforest Cafe?
Not great.
Yeah.
A lot to see.
Yeah.
Food wasn't very good.
Food's not very good. I remember the food not being good either.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. And for some reason, you wanted to point out that you watched Iron Eagle.
Okay.
Now, why would you watch Iron Eagle?
I can explain how this happened, actually. Have you watched, I'm taking it you haven't, have you watched the Cobra Kai series?
I have not.
On YouTube?
I hear nothing but amazing things about it.
So I loved it. I've binge-watched it now twice. Just the full 5 hours twice.
Seriously, everybody I know, same reaction.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Cobra Kai.
I've watched it now twice, and in the first episode, Johnny wakes up from a bender on the floor, and you can see Iron Eagle playing on the TV in the background. And there winds up being several references to Iron Eagle in Cobra Kai. It actually inspires him to get the dojo going back again.
Iron Eagle does?
Uh-huh.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you wanted to watch it first.
So I needed to see it again. It had been quite a while since I had seen it.
The last time I saw it was when it was in theaters. So.
Much like the Rainforest Cafe, it's probably been 30 years since I saw that as well.
What did you think of Iron Eagle?
It was very nice in the first couple minutes of the movie to be reacquainted with Stiles and Lamar Luttrell.
Oh,
that's very exciting. I had forgotten about that. Stiles.
What the hell ever happened to Jason Gedrick?
I don't know.
He's from Chicago, you know.
He really is?
Yeah, he went to Gordon Tech. He graduated with a friend of mine.
I had no idea.
Yeah, but his real name is Jason Gedrowick. I don't know why he got rid of one of the...
He should just change it legally to Stiles.
Well, I don't... Stiles, yeah. But Jason Gedrick is his stage name.
Okay.
His real name is Jason Gedrowick. I don't understand why... Let's get rid of that O.
Yeah, we gotta drop that.
Oh, man. I just remember it being ridiculous. Tim Thomerson's in it.
Oh, it's completely ridiculous.
And Lou Gossett, right?
Lou Gossett, yes.
Oh, man. And then they made two more.
There's two more. So now I got to go and watch the other ones. Because I love these horrible 80s movies.
Yeah.
So Iron Eagle was right up my alley.
Oh, no. I mean, that's a horrible 80s movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Speaking of horrible 80s movies, have you ever seen Gymkhata?
I have not. I'm familiar with it.
Are you familiar with
it?
Kurt Thomas, where they combine gymnastics and karate?
Yes.
Gymkhata?
I heard of it and familiar with it, but I've not actually.
Legendary.
Okay.
Seriously, if you want to watch a horror. Now, Brian, our listener, is going to. Because we have a listener who's obsessed with Gymkhata. His name is Brian.
Okay.
He calls it the finest piece of cinema ever made.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bold.
Yeah. 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 But anytime we talk about movies of any kind, he always manages to bring Gymkhata. Is there a rain scene in Gymkhata? I don't remember.
We'll find out.
Do we know by chance if that's streaming anywhere?
I don't know if it's streaming, but Brian, our listener, sent me a DVD of it.
Oh, wow.
He got it for me on DVD. I'm sure it cost him like $2. And at the front of a Walmart, that would be my guess. But well, listen, Jim, always a lot of fun talking
to you,
man.
Yes.
Thanks for hanging out a little bit longer.
My pleasure.
And thanks for being the first guest in our new digs.
I'm honored by that.
That's
you.
Cool. And we'll talk to you soon. Jim writes about music for Chicago Now, the Daily Herald, and now Forbes. Are you doing traffic?
Yeah, every now and again. That's my full-time gig, so yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Some radio, some TV.
You do some traffic reporting.
I do.
All right. RadioJimRyan.com is the website. Always a pleasure, Jim.
Thank you.
All right, man. Have a good morning, and we will take a break. And the news is coming up next right here on 720 WGN.